on that as well.
Well, Fine Gael, councillor on the Naas Municipal District, Evie Salmon, thanks for joining us on the programme this morning,
thanks,
Evie.
So.
Now, coming up between now and 11 o'clock, we'll hear from the Ballyshannon Action Group. And as we've been chronicling on the programme over the last number of weeks, on board Planola approved the proposed quarry at Ballyshannon. There was a public meeting held at Ballyshannon National School on Friday, so we'll get the reaction and outcomes from that meeting. More motions and issues from the Selbridge Leixlip Municipal District meeting. New research from the CSO called Pulse Survey Life at Home 2021. It's all about couples, and it found that women in opposite sex couples are more likely to do more of the household chores. So we'll discuss more findings about that. And also, Ger McNally will describe what happened over the weekend in the sporting world. Mixed fortunes for the Kildare teams. The hurlers were beaten, the women's footballers were beaten, but the men's senior footballers booked their place in the Leinster final, where they'll take on Dublin. All of that to come between now and 11, and of course your messages. A couple coming into us then over the last while. The focus of the transport section of the annual report is still on the new roads. Reference to cycling is tokenism, says this listener. More people cycling despite Kildare County Council. NTA found that Kildare County Council was one of the worst out of local authorities in 2019, you say. They haven't reported on 2020 yet. That's a reaction coming into us on Kildare County Council's annual report, which we discussed with Mark Stafford on the programme this morning. Is it true they spent €100 million on a road that you can't cycle or walk on the last section? Surprised the councillor signed off on that, and you say you're unhappy about that. That's in relation to the Salins bypass, and the cycling route doesn't go the whole way. It stops about three quarters of the way through the bypass, and you have to come out there at Osberstown. I suppose the reason for that is probably for health and safety, because if you keep going on that road, it merges with the dual carriageway. So you probably couldn't have a cycling route along that road. That's just my opinion. But as a cyclist, I have gone along that road, and you have to turn off at Osberstown in regards to that one. Where are the, or I got to that one in terms of the playground. You want toilets put in as well for children, because you say there are very little playgrounds around the county that have toilets. What sort of a country is this? You get 4 days hot weather in a row, and straight away they're going on about saving water. Anything like the rain we've had this year was unreal, and it was well documented that February was the wettest month on record. It's just ridiculous. Every year is the same. God knows what we would do for water if we got 3 months of summer every year like we were meant to. It's a joke, says this listener. And finally for now, hi Owen, I find it difficult to have much empathy for people on the PUP. It's higher than pittance that people get on the carer's allowance and the invalidity pension, but no outcry for it to be increased. One wonders why. We live on less than this all of the time. Perhaps people might understand somewhat after COVID, says Mick in Coyle Dove. Well, I'm sure, Mick, there are some people out there that will agree with you and some people that will disagree with you, and that is just the way it goes, unfortunately. Keep your messages coming into us, 0833 97 97 97. And I want to open up the text lines as well for our competition this morning. And to celebrate National Heritage Week and the National Heritage Week Awards, KFM has one OPW Family Heritage card to give away on the programme this morning. That's free admission to more than 45 heritage sites around Ireland for 1 year. National Heritage Week this year is running from the 14th to the 22nd of August. There's still plenty of time to get involved, but if you want to be in with a chance of winning that OPW Heritage card for a family, get in touch with us now. All you have to do is text the word heritage to 0833 97 97 97, your name and where you come from as well. That is heritage to our usual sources, 0833 97 97 97. Let's break for a piece of music. Don McLean and American Pie. That's the short version of that song. I believe there's a longer version as well. Absolutely cracking tune, and said we give that a spin because I haven't heard it on the radio in quite a while. Keep your messages coming in to us for our competition this morning. We are giving you a chance to win an OPW Family Heritage card for the year. year, free admission to more than 45 heritage sites all around Ireland for 1 year. Heritage Week, of course, running from the 14th to the 22nd of August. All you have to do, text the word heritage, your name and where you're from, to 0833 97 97 97. Now, joining me on the line is Geraldine O'Connor. She is from the Ballyshannon Action Group. Geraldine, good morning. Welcome to the programme again.
Good morning, Owen, and thank you for having me back on.
So there was a meeting on Friday night at Ballyshannon National School. The community there urged to stick together in Racefield Fight is what we're told. Just give us a little bit of background here again, very briefly, Geraldine, as to what this meeting was about, because as I've been saying throughout the morning, we've covered it on the programme before, but for people who might be new to the issue.
What the meeting was about was we were urging people that to keep Racefield a green field. We had a very good speaker there the other evening. Now the meeting was chaired by Martin Hayden, the Minister for State, and Patricia Ryan, Cathal Berry. They were all there. We had Councillor Kildare and Newbridge. They're all in support. But this chap, Kieran Cummins, he was very knowledgeable and he has taken cases like this and he has fought kind of like we're fighting, and he urged us, keep it green field. He said, if a quarry gets in, you're opening the floodgates. You're opening the floodgates, and they know, and we need to take this judicial review with on board Planola. And unfortunately, like, Kildare County Council were very good and they they refused it, and as you know, Kersaren went, you know the story, to on board Planola, and they granted it. But as he said, Kildare County Council, they're prohibited from taking the case for us. So now it's left to the community. So in order for us to take this case, we need to raise funds. We have a brilliant, brilliant community, and we have a brilliant committee on the Ballyshannon Action Group, but we cannot do it alone. We need people to do it with us and to fight with us. It's our community, it's their community. And once, he explained, once a quarry gets in, it'll be like dominoes. They have land banked so much area in the vicinity that it'll be falling. It will be absolutely falling. It will go just from one quarry to the other, and it's absolutely, like he was saying, that Ireland is the second most attractive place to mine in the world due to the favourable, lenient public policies and the regulations. And according to Kilsaren's own document on the Racefield site, there's evidence of 11 badger sets, 4 different species of bat and yellowhammers, which are all protected, and yet nothing seems to stop this quarry. Now, there's 56 homes in the direct vicinity of the proposed quarry at Racefield, and it's an extremely narrow road which will lead to the site. There's 2 national schools within 2 kilometres of the site. Now, it's very hard to police, they were saying. It's very hard. Like, the conditions there comes with the permission. Like, they can only work from 8 in the morning till 6 in the evening. 72 lorries. But that's their own lorries. It doesn't stop them from privatising and other lorries coming in and using other roads. Like, they'll use Martinstown Road. They'll use the other end of Ballyshannon Road. They'll use any road, and yet we would have no say. He said you'd have to get CCTV, then you have to get someone to analyse it. And for the fact that they wouldn't be the Kilsaren lorries doing it, there's where your problem lies.
So on board Planola, essentially overturned the decision and approved the proposed quarry at Ballyshannon. And the purpose of this meeting, really, from the Ballyshannon Action Group, Geraldine, was to bring local people up to date on the situation and also to highlight some of the issues and concerns that you've had from the beginning of this, and you just wanted to reiterate it. Now, it's worth pointing out as well that Kilsaren went through all the necessary things that they had to do in order from their point of view, and we've invited them on the programme, and if they want to come on and respond, that invitation remains open. Just remind us of the concerns that the Ballyshannon Action Group and the residents have in that area again, Geraldine.
Well, the concerns are it will no longer be a green field and it will become a quarry, which the initial was for 12 years. We know from every other quarry in the area, they get one out in the far side of Kilcullen. It's going on for 32 years now before they're finished. Now they're saying that it will, that they will finish it, and it will be, it'll be a lake, and you know that they'll, the bigger picture is that, you know, they will finish it off, but the, it won't end in 12 years' time. They will seek, I can guarantee you, Owen, they will seek an extension, and they will get it, because how the authorities look on it is, well, look, it's already in operations, you know, and it's, you know, it's doing this, whatever. So, yes, give them another 12 years, and give them another 12 years. Now, I said from the very start of this, and this is going back over 18 months, I was on with Clem, and I originally said, now, Kilsarran have said no. I can see this becoming a landfill, eventually. I don't care what anyone tells me, because they make their money in extracting what they're extracting. There's huge money in that. We all know that. But yet, there's triple the money in a landfill. Now, the one at Sillett Hill is closing, as you know. It has had its day, so it's going to close. So, therefore, they're going to... I mean, the proposed extraction activity at Racefield that will take place over the 12-year period will be to remove 250,000 tonnes of sand and gravel per year. Now, can you imagine living in that? Can you imagine living within... People are naive. People think, oh, it's only affect this road and that road. You know, dust travels. It's going to be a nightmare. We need to stop them. We need people to come on board. Everybody to come on board. We need to fight. We just cannot give in. Like, I know people said, oh, they're a big company. Yes, they're a big company, but we're a big community. Let's get behind our community. Fight. We need to fight this. We can't just sit down and let them come in and destroy. It won't be just our homes they will be destroying. It'll be every home within miles. So we need people on. We need people to get behind us. We need people to lodge to the GoFundMe page. There's an account set up in the credit union in Kilcullen. Whatever you can. Every little helps. But we need your help. We cannot do this on our own.
You have a lot of support, it seems, from the public representatives in the area, Geraldine, and I'll finish on this. What about the public support so far?
The public support has been fantastic, but it seems to be limited to a certain area. I think people outside the area either think, oh, well, it won't affect us, or Kilsarran are a big company. If I hear that once more, yes, they are a big company, but we're a bigger community. So as a community, we need to stand together and fight for what is right. What is right for our children, what is right for our grandchildren. You cannot allow a company like this to come in and destroy a community. And that's the only way. There were people there at the meeting the other night, and they were very irate. And they were saying, over there, you know, body, will they come in and all the rest of it. People are very, very angry. So we need to fight this, and we have very, very little time to get this judicial review up and running. So we need everybody's help. Everybody. And it's not just the equine it will affect. We have farmers down that road, and it's going to destroy their livelihood, because once they start digging, the water will drain. There will be no water. There'll be no water for the animals. There will be nothing. And we were told this 18 months ago by somebody at another meeting. But everybody thought it would. I think people got complacent because Kildare County Council refused them. And I think, I suppose me included, thought, no, that's great now, Kildare County Council. And when they appealed it, we still thought, no, they will see, you know, they'll see what's right. But we were so wrong. We were so wrong on. So now we have to fight, and we need everybody there. But we have great representatives, and we have great people that are fighting. We have great people, and we have a great community. So it's just to stick together as a community and fight. And fight we will. We'll fight till the bitter end.
Geraldine O'Connor from the Ballyshannon Action Group with those issues raised at the public meeting that was held in Ballyshannon National School on Friday. We've been covering this topic for the best part of a couple of years now, and we'll keep an eye on it as well as it progresses. Thanks for joining us on the programme this morning, Geraldine.
Thank you very much, Owen, for having us. Thank you. Take care.
And as I said, if Kilsaran wishes to respond, the invitation remains open to them to join us on the programme either tomorrow morning or any morning that would suit them here on KFM. Quick break to take. When we come back, we'll be going to the Selbridge Leixlip Municipal District with Councillor Kira Galvin, and we'll also bring you that CSO research where women in opposite sex couples are more likely to do more of the household chores. All right, back to the Selbridge Leixlip Municipal District meeting then we go, and it's good morning to Labour Councillor Kira Galvin. Welcome to the programme, Kira.
Thanks, Owen.
Looking at the motions that you brought forward then to the meeting, you were asking the council or that the Selbridge Leixlip Municipal District Committee write to the relevant persons in the OPW, highlighting that the kissing gate at the path leading down to the river near the gates of Castletown is preventing wheelchair access to that path, and asking that the gate be removed or replaced to facilitate access.
Yeah, so I brought this motion on foot of a constituent contacting me. His son uses a wheelchair, and he highlighted that they're unable to use this path down to the river. So obviously the Selbridge Leixlip councillors don't have direct say over anything that happens in Castletown because it's controlled by the OPW. So I asked that we would write to the OPW and have them look at the kissing gate. Now, they wrote back and they said they're reluctant to change that gate. What they have done in the meantime is they've opened a gate slightly further up the drive. It's kind of half, anyone who's walked up the drive in Castletown will know it's about halfway up, and they're opening that on a trial basis. However, I have asked that we write back to them and really highlight the difficulties with the kissing gate and for access, not just for wheelchair access, also for buggies.
You wanted the council to confirm as well how many people are currently on the housing list in Selbridge and Leixlip. Did you get a response on that?
I did, yeah. They've told me that the number of people currently on the housing list in Selbridge is 573. And it's 218 leaks. But that's actually significantly lower than the last figure I got from them. So I think that might actually just be people who are in need of housing. Those aren't people who are already housed on the housing assistance payment or anything. But I need to look into this further. It's obviously still a huge number, Owen. It's 573 people. I mean, imagine how many estates that is that we would need to build in order to meet the demand on the housing list.
And do you have the
very low income?
Do you have the number, Kira, what it was beforehand, just to see how?
I don't have it to hand, but it was in excess of 1,000 the last time that I got a number from the council, yeah.
Okay, so it has decreased significantly, but still quite a significant number of people on the housing list.
Yeah, I think it's a different count. I think it's a different number they're counting. I think the last time included people on housing assistance payments, I think this figure doesn't, but I need to see clarification on that. I'm still waiting for an answer back on that.
Okay, you wanted a Clubs and Societies Day to be held in Selbridge later on this year or perhaps into the early part of next year. That's to help, what you say, connect local residents with the many local clubs and societies in the area.
Yeah, this is really interesting and fun one, actually. So the council came back and said, the community section said they wouldn't have a person to do that for Selbridge, because if they did it for Selbridge, they'd have to do it for 14 other towns and villages. So they suggested I contact a local group. So I've had a really positive conversation, initial conversation with the chairperson of Selbridge Community Council about this. They're keen to explore it further. They're going to bring it to their meeting on in September. And we'll know then whether or not they'll be in a position to facilitate this day happening. And for your listeners who perhaps haven't been to university, Clubs and Society Days are often held at the start of term, and all the students set out the stand. So, you know, you have archery, you have political parties, you have mountain climbing, whatever you have in the university, would all have a desk in a big hall. So I thought it would work really well as a format for Selbridge, because there's so many different clubs and societies and even community groups and charities that are operating the place that could really do with extra new members. But also there's a lot of people in Selbridge who don't know what's going on in Selbridge, so it would really help them connect to each other. So I think it could be great. We're looking at probably sometime around Easter at the soonest, just because we're a bit cautious about COVID. We don't want to be doing it this side of Christmas. So sometime next year, hopefully, we'll have, maybe we'll invite KFM along for the day.
As long as there's a football society or a football club down there, I'll make sure that I can join it as well.
we'll see what we can do.
The final question then, Ciara, can the council confirm when the upgrades at the Abbey Playground are due to be undertaken? Where is the Abbey Playground?
So the Abbey Playground is it's in the Abbey in Selbridge, and it's like leased by the council. Actually, it's owned by St John of God's. Now, it's been closed since, I've been talking to Clem about this before, but it's been closed since March last year when COVID hit, because the residents and the service users in John of God's were using the Abbey as their exercise ground, which I completely understand, but I've repeatedly tried over the last 15 months to get some sort of access to that playground for the children of Selbridge, because it's a bit ridiculous that there's a playground there and there's been no children playing in it for the last 15 months. And they're even talking now of putting in an extra, I think, €65,000 worth of works into that playground. So I was trying to find out, are those scheduled works? Are they going to go ahead? Because we still have no indication of when that playground's going to reopen. So they've come back and essentially said that the upgrades have not been possible to date. So I actually had a conversation at the meeting and earlier on the agenda than this particular question, where I said, look, can we not discuss maybe not putting all this money in there, because there's another $50,000 scheduled to go in next year, so can we maybe put that in excess of $100,000 into the playground that the children in Selbridge can actually use? I think we're going to have a conversation with the other councillors about that, but that's something I will be pushing for.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Labour councillor on the Selbridge Leixlip Municipal District, Ciara Galvin, thanks for joining us on the programme this morning, Ciara, and good morning to you. Let's go to Ciara Noble then in Studio 2.
Yeah, from one Ciara to another, we're going to now look at the CSO, Owen, the Pulse Survey, the Life at Home 2021, and we're looking at couples. And joining me is statistician with the Central Statistics Office, Gerry Riley. Good morning, Gerry.
Morning, Ciara.
Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it. We're going to go through some of these stats. So there's been quite a difference in perception around the responsibility for household chores. 65% of women who live with a man said they are mostly responsible, while 38% of men said their female partner is mostly responsible. So that's about a 30% difference there, Gerry. The men seem to be viewing it very differently. Who are we to believe?
This is the problem. I think you believe both. But I don't think we can kind of prove either way who to believe. But we did find it surprising. Like, you would expect, as you said, your 2 in 3 female respondents said they're mostly responsible for household chores. And only 9% of men said that they are responsible. But then on the flip side, you had 38% of men saying that the female partner, that the female partner is responsible. And you would expect, like with equal perceptions, you'd expect that the percentage of female respondents who said that they are mostly responsible to be equal to the percentage of male respondents who said that their partner is mostly responsible. But we don't get that in the statistics. And I think it's stark in relation to households with children. We asked male and female respondents who were part of a partnership who have children in the house, who is mostly responsible for providing structure and discipline to the children. So for these questions, the answer options were mostly me, balanced, or mostly my spouse or partner. So when it came to female respondents, 37% of females said that they're mostly responsible for providing structure and discipline. And 62% of women said that it's balanced. And only 1% said that it's the male partner is mostly responsible for providing the structure and the discipline to the children. But then when you look at the results from the male respondents with children, 80% of them said it's balanced. And only 8% of men said that they're mostly responsible. And then only 12% said that the female partner is mostly responsible. So it does show that there's a huge difference in perceptions in relation to, you know, who's mostly responsible for all the household tasks and duties.
Now, Gerry, I'm sure if the CSO undertook something like this in the 1950s or 1960s, the stats would probably be very different. But in general, the stereotype kind of proves true with the majority of these findings. It says here that 82% of women who are not employed and whose male partner is employed said they are mostly responsible for organising, taking care of the household, 27% of men. Something I found very interesting here, 93% of women say they feel free to spend money on themselves without asking permission from their partner. That's compared with 83% of male respondents in an opposite sex partnership feeling like they can do so. Again, kind of flagging the stereotype.
Yeah, I'm not sure there in relation to flagging the stereotype, because I actually found that surprising myself. I, you know, that you had nearly a 10 percentage point difference that women said that they were free to spend money on themselves without asking, compared with 83% of men.
And that was those who were not necessarily, in every case, employed themselves.
No. This was over, regardless of labour status, that was the percentage. But we found in same-sex partnerships, 97% of women in same-sex partnerships said that they are free to spend money on themselves without asking permission from their female partner, where it was only 91% of men who were in a same-sex partnership said that they could. So it comes across in both opposite sex and in same-sex relationships that women were more likely to say that they can feel free to spend money on themselves without asking permission from their partner. As to the reason for it, I do not know. Just the question was asked, and there are the results.
Yes, we do realise that. And Jerry, tell me, what stats were you most surprised about yourself?
I think for me, it's possibly when you're looking at both persons in an opposite sex relationship where both are employed. Like we discussed a little earlier there, Kira, about, you know, 65% of women, you know, overall being mostly responsible for, you know, chores. But when you look at when both are in full-time employment, you had 42% of women said that they're mostly responsible and 6% of men. And when it comes to grocery shopping, it's 43% of women mostly responsible and 20% of men. So, you know, the burden seems to fall on the women regardless of the labour activity. What I kind of found a little bit surprising, I guess, as well, is that when it comes to retired couples, so when you look at retired couples, you had 2/3 of men who are retired living with a retired partner. They reported high levels of satisfaction with how the tasks are divided in the couple, compared with only 28% of retired women. And I guess it's not surprising, because 65% of retired female respondents who are living with a retired partner said that they're responsible for taking care of the chores, where it was only 5% of male retirees who live with a female partner. So I guess, if you know what I mean, you probably would expect, you know, as people are getting older, and especially, you know, with a retired couple, that there'd be a more equitable distribution, if you know what I mean, in relation to who does what. But then, as you said, you know, there may be a generation thing with that. You know, you said a bit earlier, if you go back to the 50s, you know what I mean, and you're looking at older respondents, actually, you know, and obviously who are retired. So they're probably the things I found probably the most interesting. And I suppose the other thing I found interesting is we asked the persons who are in a relationship, in an opposite sex relationship, that whose opinion usually prevails when there's an argument or a disagreement between the in the couple. So the respondents were allowed to say mostly my opinion, or it's about equal, or it's mostly my spouse. And basically we got nearly the exact same percentage, with 60% of females and 58% of males said that it's about equal. But it was almost 1 in 4 female respondents, and only 7% of male respondents said it's mostly my opinion that prevails. And then men were far more likely to report that their female partner's opinion prevails when there's a disagreement. So 35% of men said that the woman's whatever opinion goes or whatever, and that only compared with 17% of women.
Well, I don't think that's much of a surprise, Jerry, is it?
Well, I don't know. I have a wife and 3 daughters here.
That's so good. You stay on that fence, Jerry, and stay there with the wife and 3 daughters. Yeah. You're better off. Listen, Jerry Riley, statistician with the CSO. Very interesting. It's the Pulse Survey Life at Home 2021, and all the information is available on cso.ie. Thank you, Jerry.
Thanks, Kira. Bye-bye.
last chance to enter into our competition this morning then to celebrate National Heritage Week and the National Heritage Week Awards. We have an OPW Family Heritage Card to give away. That's free admission to more than 45 heritage sites around Ireland for 1 year. And all you have to do to be in with a chance of winning is text the word heritage, followed by your name and where you're from to 0833 97 97 97, and we will be announcing the winner before we finish up at 11 o'clock. First of all, though, time to do this.
Sports Review Monday on Kildare Today.
And we're joined by Ger McNally on the programme this morning. Good morning, Ger.
Good morning, Clem. Sorry, you're in the hot seat.
That wasn't pre-planned at all. Come here, it was mixed fortunes for Kildare over the weekend. The hurlers and the women's footballers beaten, but we'll start off with the men's senior football team advancing to the Leinster senior football final, but didn't have it all their own way against Westmeath.
No, certainly not. It was fairly nerve-wracking there in the final 20 minutes or so, because Kildare probably didn't make things easy for themselves, although their hands was forced a little bit because of injuries. They lost two absolutely key players to injury, Kevin Feely and Owen Doyle. So it was a very, very young side. At least we were trying to count those five or six players playing the first championship game for Kildare in Croke Park in the team that finished. So it was a very, very young side. But they just about held on to get over the line. Shane O'Sullivan put the seal on the victory with a fantastic point in the 69th minute. But really, it was the two goals in a very short space of time in the second half to set Kildare up for the win. Both of them heavily involving Daniel Flynn and Jimmy Hyland. Flynn in particular, he's something else. You know, he really has been a miss for Kildare when he was injured. He's somebody who's not always involved in the game, but when he produces something like he did yesterday, he can really just win a game in an instant. His passing to Jimmy for the first goal in the 43rd minute was absolutely superb. Jimmy was able to bundle it in from close range, and then the 47th minute goal that Daniel scored himself kind of summed up everything that's good about him. He showed his skill, strength, pace, linked up very well with Jimmy Hyland, and the key thing then was once he was through one-on-one with the goalkeeper, thinking back to 2017 in the Leinster final when he was in a similar position against Dublin, he blasted a shot at a nice height and Stephen Cluxton was able to make a save. And he's often talked about that miss in the past. He's been asked about it a number of times, but this time when he was through one-on-one, he kept his composure and shot underneath the goalkeeper, and it was a great goal. But that put Kildare six ahead. But as I said, yeah, the last quarter was pretty nerve-wracking as Westmeath came on strongly.
Did Westmeath surprise you at all, Ger, with how well they played, or would you say Kildare and Westmeath are just that closely matched?
No, I wouldn't say Westmeath surprised me now, because they're a good side. They got relegated from Division 2, but very, very unfortunate. A lot of their games seem to be very small margins, and they're managed by a very impressive guy, Jack Cooney, who had a spell with Selbridge in the Kildare Championship as well, in the leagues as well. So they were a good side. They certainly asked Kildare an awful lot of questions, and from a Westmeath point of view, if I was a Westmeath fan or supporter or player, I'd probably be saying that it was a game to be left behind, because they kicked 10 wide in the second half after just kicking one in the first half, and particularly as well in the 53rd minute they were denied a goal by an absolutely magnificent save by Mark Donlan, and a goal at that stage really could have turned the game around. But you know, you have to give credit to Kildare, because as I said, they've lost those two key players, but not just players in Owen Doyle and Kevin Feely. They are two absolute leaders in the side, and two players who bring a huge amount of experience. So it was a very young side finishing, as I said, but Jack O'Connor has put an awful lot of faith in these young players this year. He's given them an awful lot of game time, and in fairness, he's been rewarded, because pretty much so, man, those young players have stood up and really delivered when it's counted through the league and now into the championships. Like Paddy McDermott came on for his first ever senior competitive minutes yesterday in the heat of that battle, so that was a huge ask, but he did very well. And I mentioned Shane O'Sullivan's points as well, and Alex Byrne as well deserves a special mention, a teenager making his first senior championship start in Croke Park, and he was excellent throughout the entire course of the game. He barely put a foot wrong. So those young players that Jack has put his faith in, he's definitely been rewarded for that faith, because they really have stood up and shone this year.
Well, let's hear from the manager, Jack O'Connor, then, speaking after the game.
It was tough going there in the end. We were hanging on, and you know, Mark Donlan bailed us out with that save from John Heslin. But you know, Westmeath are a good side. They're very athletic, very fit. They came at us in droves there in the last 15 minutes, and we did well to hold out. But you know, we realise now that we face a mammoth task in the final, and we'll have to try and improve again from today.
And Gerard, in the extended interview as well that you did with Jack O'Connor at Croke Park, I heard him say that he doesn't think there's a better goalkeeper in the country at the moment other than Mark Donlan, and certainly if there is, he'd like to meet him. But Mark Donlan pulled off some cracking saves yesterday.
Yeah, and like we've been talking about him on a few occasions this season. It's just a kind of continuation of the form that he's shown all year. It was his 87th league and championship appearance for Kildare yesterday, so that means he's gone past Christy Byrne now. So only Ollie Crinigan has played more goals and games, more games and goal for Kildare. He still has a bit to go to catch up on Ollie Crinigan's record, but now in the second most appearances for a Kildare goalkeeper, it shows the kind of consistency that he has shown over the last number of years, and he really, really has developed into a top-class goalkeeper. Jack listed off some of his qualities, and you know, he could have kept going as well. There was that brilliant save in the 53rd minute that I mentioned, but all round as well, he caught a high ball late in the game as well, and Jack was very complimentary about as well as his last kick out too, that got Kildare right up the field with a very accurate kick out that landed up near the Westmeath 45. So it's 4 clean sheets in 6 games this year for Mark Donlan, and he will definitely be in consideration for Kildare's player of the year when we come to the end of things.
Yeah, so Kildare into their first Leinster final now since 2017, up against, of course, none other than the Dubs. Did you manage to catch any of that game against Meath, which followed the Kildare game? Because Dublin, you know, they led for the majority of the game. I think they led for the whole game nearly, but Meath nearly produced a comeback in the second half.
Yeah, I actually didn't. I was in the back room, in the press room, writing up a few reports, and I had the bizarre kind of experience of listening to the game through the crowd reaction. So there was plenty of crowd noise, and I have to say, I was expecting Dublin to have scored a couple of goals, a couple of more goals in the second half when I came out, judging by the reaction. But yeah, no, it was a disappointing second half performance by all accounts for Dublin, just watching a Sunday game last night. But I mean, still, it's a very, very big ask for Kildare to go in now against Dublin, and particularly, as I said, if those two players, Kevin Feely and Owen Doyle, are missing, and Jack O'Connor wasn't optimistic at all that those two players could come back. Kevin Feely, unfortunately, it looks like a serious knee injury, and Owen Doyle has been really carrying a hamstring injury for most of the season. I'm not quite sure how he's got through the games that he has, because every match it seems to be that he's had a late fitness test, and apparently he had one yesterday, or sorry, one on Saturday before playing on Sunday. So it looks like his kind of hamstring maybe is just finally giving in. So if those two players are missing, along with Paul Cribben as well, it really is going to be an inexperienced Kildare side going in against Dublin. But as I said, these young lads have really made a good account of them so far, and we just hope that they have one more game in them. As Jack O'Connor said, Kildare certainly won't be going up there to make up the numbers.
Yeah, that was the footballers in action yesterday. On Saturday then, a bitterly disappointing day for the Kildare hurlers up against Meath in Parnell Park in the Joe McDonagh relegation playoff final. That means now that they were beaten and they will drop down to the Christy Ring after just one season in the Joe McDonagh. And Ger, it's that second half performance and the last quarter really that's killing Kildare, but again, they just didn't really seem to come out of the dressing room in the second half.
Yeah, it was so frustrating watching on from the stands, and I'm sure so frustrating as well for the likes of David Herity and his management team, and even the players themselves, because it's just hard to put your finger on it, because Kildare were so good the previous week against the West Meath side, who went on and won the McDonagh Cup later on the Saturday afternoon in Croke Park. And it was just Kildare looked like a different team on Saturday afternoon, particularly in the second half. Like, Meath scored the first 9 points of the second half, which is remarkable. Kildare didn't score until the 57th minute in the second half, and in fairness, the game had already started to turn in the second quarter. Kildare had been excellent in the first quarter, so they started so well. Jack Sheridan scored a goal in the 13th minute. They were 6 points ahead at the water break, but Meade battled back to within a point then late in the first half. Kildare scored the last point of the half to go in 2 clear, but then yeah, that third quarter, it's just so frustrating, because David Herity said it afterwards that Kildare saved their worst performance of the season for the most important game, and they just couldn't get to grips at all with Meade in that second half, and Meade pulled away to a big, big win in the end. And unfortunately, yeah, relegation back to Christy Ring after all the positivity around Kildare hurling over the last number of months. It's a relegation, and Kildare would have to try and battle through that Christy Ring competition again.
Yeah, let's hear what David Herity had to say then, speaking after that game.
That's shockingly disappointing. We didn't turn up yet. We saved our worst performance for the biggest occasion there this year. Very difficult to find, I suppose, the positives out of that performance. We can find the positives out of the year and out of the last 12 months and where Kildare hurling is at. It's at times like this, you nearly just have to focus in on that rather than getting so down about that performance, because, Jesus, it's crying, lads. Sorry, it was just... It's just so bitterly disappointed. I don't think anyone, if they put their hand on heart, played to their potential at all today.
Yeah, and Ger, I suppose that kind of, in a way, overshadows the great performance that we have seen from Kildare hurling teams over the last while, and even in this past week, the under-20s beaten, the minors beaten, and the senior team beaten. But it is worth remembering how far Kildare hurling has come over the last number of years, and there is some great work being done.
Yeah, like it's a real down at the finish of the season. There's no getting away from that. It's a huge disappointing defeat, and to not preserve that Joe McDonagh status really is disappointing. It's a crushing blow, no doubt about it. But as you said, rightly say, like the summer has been fantastic for Kildare hurling. There's been some great memories made of those underage results. Don't forget, Kildare will be playing at a higher level of league hurling next year, so those under-20s that are coming onto the panel, and there will be a number of them next year, I'm sure, to bolster what is already a strong panel, they're going to get the experience of playing at that higher level of hurling. And again, just going back to something that David Herity said after the game, it's just a pity that Kildare haven't been able to align the kind of playing at the higher level of league with the higher level of championship. Like this season they were in Division 2B, which wasn't great preparation for going into the McDonagh Cup. Next year now they'll be in 2A, but then they're in the Christy Ring Cup. So just the hope is that they can kick on and get promotion back up again, win that Christy Ring next year, and then keep their league status and keep it going, because there's some really good young players coming through to help bolster the senior ranks in the next coming years.
Okay, and just finally then for this morning, Ger, the Kildare ladies team were in action in the championship as well on Sunday. Obviously it was at the same time as the game in Croke Park, so you didn't get a chance to see it, but they were beaten by Laois, a team who beat them in the league final, and it's a defeat now in the intermediate championship for Daniel Moynihan's side.
Yeah, I think that's the fourth defeat against Laois in the last three this year, and then the last game of last year as well. So unfortunately it just seems like Laois have Kildare's number at the moment, but again, we're trying to follow the scores from Croke Park. It seemed like a nip and tuck game all the way. Laois were on top early on, but Kildare came flying back into the match, and I think we're ahead at one stage late on in the game before a late Laois goal. So yeah, disappointing I'm sure from the Kildare girls, but again, they're just falling short against Laois. But again, it's a young side, and Daniel Moynihan, I'm sure, will look to improve and go forward again.
All right, thanks indeed for that, Ger. We'll have much more reaction to those games later on today and throughout the course of our news bulletins. And we'll be back in Croke Park in 2 weeks' time. Full commentary of the Leinster Senior Football Championship final between Kildare and Dublin. Thanks indeed, Ger, and good morning to you. Now, after the break, we will give you the winner of our competition this morning. We'll have more competitions as well of the same nature on Wednesday and Friday of this week. I'll give you details about that, and we'll get to a couple of your messages as well.